Welcome back to Kicking It Local, the podcast all about the football community in South Australia. I'm your host, Johnny Kecko. Macron Sports Hub Adelaide are ready to provide your club, academy or organisation with all its teamwear needs. For inquiries or online shopping, head to macronstoreadelaide.com.au. And now let's get back into part three of my chat with Nat Harrison. And if you don't remember part two, here is a quick refresher.
Got more involved. He then got involved with the South Australian Soccer Federation. And then he became chairman. So he was chairman for quite a many years. And in actual fact, he was also responsible. He was on the committee responsible for bringing the youth championships to Australia. I think that was in 1981.
You told me a bit of the story about Hindmarsh Stadium, how it all started and became the home of football.
Yeah. So once again, my dad was involved in all of that as well. And I said to you, just around the corner from where you are, Addy Reserve, lots and lots of clubs used to play here. And it was like a quagmire. It was just mud.
Now it's totally different. They play baseball down there. They've got hockey and skid kits.
Yeah.
And that's it. And and a playground as well.
Yeah. So they used to play there. That was a lot of different clubs played there.
Yep.
Including,
I had no idea about it.
Yeah, including Lion. But back in the day, it was, I believe it was in the very late 50s or early 60s that they were looking for a ground for USC Lions. So now the Ukrainian Hall is in Hindmarsh. It's on Osmond Street. So yep. It's one street away from Hindmarsh Stadium. So when Dad saw this oval, it was rugby and hockey was being played there. So he made inquiries as to, okay, well, they play that in summer. What happens in winter here? So obviously it was not being used. And so they approached Adelaide City Council and they said, you know, what's the chances of us hiring this oval? And they said, well, we wouldn't do it for one club because what happens on the other weeks where you're not playing at home? It's not being used. And so they said, if you can get another club that can go in with you and you can both share it as your home ground, we'll be willing to consider. And so Dad went to West Adelaide Hellas and said, hey, guys, you want to share this club, this ground? You know, one week we play home, next week you play home, and we'll share the cost of it. And they went to Adelaide City Council and Adelaide City Council agreed.
Yeah.
And so it became the home of those two clubs, but then progressed into being the home of where South Australian games and South Australian competitions were played because it was such a good pitch. Mm. So when it first when they first got hold of it, there was £500, which is about $1,000, that was for the year, the fee. But then they also had to do upgrades, so they spent £10,000 on the pitch and £10,000 on infrastructure like change rooms and things like that and fencing. And so their initial lease was for 20 years.
Yep.
And then after that, obviously they expanded it each time and then it's grew into, the grandstand was first very, very old and they redid that. And then obviously when we had the World Cup here going back, I can't remember what year that was when we had some World Cup games here. Men's
qualifiers,
World Cup.
Yes.
Yes.
Back in 2004, I reckon.
2004. And so they did a few upgrades then. And
on the Olympics, for the Olympics as well in 2000?
Oh, yes.
That's the main
2000,
one.
2000, that's yes. Right. And then obviously they went, okay, we need to, if this is going to be the home of football, we need to spend more money. And, look, there was a lot of arguments and that don't spend money on that. That's a terrible ground. But in actual fact, everyone you talk to say you're immersed in the game when you're there because you're right there.
And when the World Cup was down, I asked some of the players from the Women's World Cup, some of the best players in the world, and they said that that was the best stadium to play in the World Cup in Australia.
There you go.
Because they love the ground itself, they love the stadium, and they love being so close to the fans.
Yeah, it is an amazing thing. It's a great experience for fans, but great experience for those that are playing on the pitch as well.
I loved hearing the background story of it because I've been going to Cooper Stadium or Harmer Stadium for, well, what is it now, 2005, almost 20 years for me.
It's scary when you start counting, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's amazing. And then I never knew the real background story, and to have your dad be a part of that initial movement of it is incredible to hear that.
Yeah, so there were a few guys involved and he was one of them and was able to secure it. So that was a story that he told me a long time ago, as well as the story of the name Adelaide United.
Mm.
So Adelaide United, when they started in the last year of the NSL and also the first year of A-League, is not the first time that the name Adelaide United has been used. So back when the NSL was being created and started in 1978, there was two licenses for South Australian teams, but there were three teams that were actually going for that license. So West Adelaide Hellas was one, which was obviously a Greek, mainly Greek team. Adelaide City Juventus, which was an Italian team.
Yep.
And then there was also a third group of clubs together that made a conglomerate team. And that included USC Lyon, Polonia, Beograd and Port Lion.
Yep.
And so we had my father, which was part of USC Lyon. John Kuzmina's father, Alex Kuzmina, was part of the was the president of Croydon, or Polonia, they were called back then. Len Aligich, who is the grandfather of Richie and Di, he was the chairman or president, or whatever they called him, of Port Lion or Lion, sorry. Port Adelaide, they were back then, they weren't Port Lion. And then Mr. Adelich, Len Adelich, I think his name was, he was from Beograd. So those four clubs created Adelaide United.
Yep.
And they pushed and pushed to try and get one of the licenses because they said, we got four clubs here, we got four different nationalities, we're going to bring in more people to support them. But in the end, the NSL went with Juventus and West Adelaide.
So that name disappeared and then it popped up 25 years later.
It popped up because I reckon when they were – now, did it pop up through John Kuzmina or did it pop up through people that were on the committee creating Adelaide United and they were around back then and they said, hey – this was a name put forward when we were trying to do it for the
similar,
NSL. It's
a similar concept to uniting. Yeah. Instead of those four clubs uniting back then, it's ended up being to unite all of South Australia.
Exactly.
So it had the similar concept and it's very fitting. Yeah. I've never heard that story before.
I only heard about it or I was doing the show so because I remember when we had John Kuzmina's father on, Alex, I mentioned that to him and he said, yeah, that's right. We went through that and unfortunately we weren't successful. But when my father said to me, he said, you know, that's not the first time Adelaide United's name being mentioned. I said, what are you talking about? And he said, and then he told the story and I'm there.
Wow.
Get out of here. I didn't even know that. Yeah. He goes, that's what we did.
And
so
it's uncanny that John Kuzmina, the son, was a part of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. So that's another great story that you get to hear about and you go, wow, I didn't know that was the concept, you know.
Wow.
So.
Well, I could talk all day. I said it a few times already. We could still talk, but I think it's getting pretty late now when we're recording. we should wrap it up. But is there any other stories that you would love to talk about before we do wrap things up?
Look, I reckon I've covered a lot of things that we talked about. I guess another show that we had, which was really good, was the AF Adelaide United Coaches Show, and that's when we had Rilio Vidmar and Joe Mullen on. And why we had that was Adelaide United had that most successful year where they got into the Asian Cup.
That was very good. Yeah. The jersey up there is signed by the group stage team from that year.
I've got a Guernsey signed as well, but so that was interesting because they got into the Asian Cup, but Aurelio did not have the coaching accreditation to be able to coach. So he didn't have European coaches license, but Joe Mullen did, and that was when Joe Mullen stepped in to be the coach for when they were playing the Asian Cup games. Oh, Did you go to some of those games?
Oh, yeah.
Weren't they amazing?
Some of the best moments.
Oh, some of the Japanese teams that they played, and Osaka and some of the other. Yeah. It's like they played lightning fast and such good, crisp football, and it was so good. I think everyone that was at the stadium had such an amazing time. And then seeing all the fans from those countries that had their little flags, the Japanese had the flags of the Koreans, and they were enjoying it too.
I loved it. That time, I felt like LA United was the only team that embraced the Asian Cup back then, Asian Champions League. And I loved it as a fan as well. I remember standing when Bunyaka were here in Adelaide, I was standing right behind their fans. And I still remember to a T when we got the penalty and Cassio put his hands up in the air.
Yeah.
I could still picture it, and I'm getting excited. Yeah. Then threw my hat in the air when we scored. But I even through the podcast as well, being told stories about when Bunyaka rang up the club and asked, where do we park our private jet?
Right.
Just dealing with things like that.
Yeah, right.
It's incredible. Incredible times back then. And I think I remember watching a doco from Vidmar talking about when they got to an airport and then they weren't allowed in. They had all handed their passports over, and then they didn't see their passports for like an hour or something.
That was probably when they were playing up the Middle East or somewhere.
I think it was,
because they had a lot of issues, and then they were planning the games really quickly, so there was a lot of travel, and then it was making it hard for them to play, and all sorts of things. But see, we all share that. That's the beauty of football.
Yeah.
I always say, I remember one time when my daughter was having training with the state team, right, and I could see to the side this group of girls playing. Like, what are they playing? And they were dead quiet, but all you could hear was the ball, and it had like little bells in it. And it was the deaf team. So it was a deaf league of football. And so the girls couldn't hear. Sorry, it wasn't the deaf league. It was a blind league.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they couldn't see, but they could hear the ball. And so I went over and I talked to the coach. I'm there, what's all this? I said, yeah, this is part of we've got six teams that are in the South Australian Blind Soccer League, and this is how we play, by hearing where the ball's going. I mean, that's amazing. And they were good.
Mm.
So it was like another thing. Wow, look at that. I didn't know that existed. Yeah. We filmed one time at the Phoenix Cup, which was for all players that had disabilities, and that was the most – beautiful and most humbling day of filming football that I've ever experienced, because it's all kids with disabilities, ranging right up to, you know, older guys, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
It was just a brilliant day of
That's
football.
Awesome.
So, yes, I must write a book.
you do. You need to. It's
must write a book.
You've been here for over 3 hours now.
Wow. doesn't seem like it.
No, but it's been great. I've really enjoyed hearing the stories and the comparing the moments like from yours back then and then what it's like now. And it's awesome. And I think the one thing that's the same thing is those people that are involved in the game as well, that are helping us out and being a part of it all, it's nothing's changed. The community's still as good as what it was back then. That's one thing I've taken out of this as well. Mm. It's a great community.
One thing that we had in our show was also Volunteer of the Month.
Yeah.
Because we recognised that there was this one guy, Bob Lowe, that was down at Playford, that he'd been there for something like 42 years, and he took money at the gate and he did this and he cleaned up and he did. And so we would give him, we would have sponsors that at that stage we had a sponsor called Marco Polo Foods, which are like continental foods.
Yep.
And the guy would give us a big hamper full of stuff, and we would take that to whoever was the volunteer of the month. So
that's awesome.
Clubs would nominate it,
yep.
And then we'd pick the volunteer of the month. So that was really good to be able to recognize the people that do things for nothing all the time and are there for years and years and years. So
that's awesome.
So.
Yeah.
Wow. Yes.
There we go. I think we spoke about a lot, but I think we could do another 60 episodes.
Yeah, well, you know, that's probably not that many, but you got to hear a little bit of the things that, you know, sort of I did and got involved in. And, I really enjoyed it. I'm very, very proud of what I was able to produce.
Yep.
I don't think I will do it again, because that time is over now, and there's more modern things and more younger people that do everything these days. So, you know, I leave it in your good, capable hands.
Oh, thank you.
And you're doing a great job, so congratulations.
Oh, cheers. Thank you so much. And it's great to be a part of. I love it. And I know why you did it for so long and the amount of effort you put into it because it's so rewarding.
It is. It is very rewarding.
Well, close to wrapping it all up, Nat. It's been good chatting with you, but there's a lot that goes into this into the show that you've done, Full On Football, and I feel like I know what it's like to do things by myself. It's a lot of work, but it's always good to have people there helping you. In the early days, you had someone special that was by your side and helped you through that first season, Michael Brooks, former LA United player. What was that like to have him there and as your co-host through that first year?
It was really good. It was a strategic choice that I had. I did have three different people that I interviewed to see who would co-host with me in that first year because it was a 90-minute show. So that's a long time to be able to host a show. And Michael, when I interviewed Michael, he was just as excited as I was to do the show. So number one, that's really healthy.
Yeah.
So he had the passion as well. But we were a perfect fit because of my age, I knew the players that were sort of older and retiring and then those that were even older than them, so the players in the past.
Yep.
But he knew the players that were playing at that time because he was playing himself.
Yeah.
So he was 11 years younger than me, so the matchup was perfect because – you know, I knew the older people, he knew the current players, and it just really, really worked well. I really wanted to mention him because he was with me for the first year and then later on after that he went into coaching, so he did some coaching, so he wasn't available. But he made it possible to give the show credibility. And so obviously we would get a wider range of people that would follow the show. He assisted me in, taking turns coming into from a break and going out to a break, which was fantastic. And then he himself was able to ask questions of people. Like, you know, we used to always have an Adelaide United segment that was at the top of the show. And so we'd have people like Ross Aloisi. We would have, you know, the keepers. We would have Richie Aligich. We would have, you know, the captains. We would have... lots of other players that would come on, whoever they could make available. And, of course, you know, he was a teammate in that first year. So he was able to associate himself with what they were doing. He was no longer playing with them, but he was in that first inaugural year, so he was able to draw off of that. Another time was... you were asking me what was my favourite moment, and I couldn't really pinpoint one moment because there were lots of different parts and times over the 4 years. But I know when we spent a day with the Matildas back in 2006, so we went, we interviewed the coach, the equipment manager, the physio, the football manager, some of the players, and we were able to watch them train. We went to their hotels. We're in their hotel rooms just like as if we were guests.
Yeah.
We interviewed Cheryl Salisbury because she was the captain back then, amongst other players, some of them that you see now doing media. And I know that Michael was in his element. He absolutely loved it. And he kept saying, I can't believe we're here interviewing the Matildas. Because back then they weren't promoted. You know, nobody was promoting them. And they, you know, back in the old days, they were playing a tournament. So their season was like 10 days of playing football. Or they might have 3 weeks and that was their season. They didn't have a league season like we have now.
Yeah.
So it was very, very early days. They kept thanking us for saying, oh, thanks so much for spending a day with us. Thanks so much for spending time and getting to know us. And Tommy Samani was the coach back then.
Yep.
And they all thanked us for promoting them. So it was a really special time back then.
Yeah.
And I just had to make mention of Michael because he was able to help us get through the whole year, which was obviously I think we did 27 shows in that first year.
Yeah.
Because we came in with a few shows before the season started, and then obviously once the season finished, we did a, you know, after the grand final show.
Yeah.
To wrap things up. But yeah, he was really fantastic. I can't thank him enough for helping us to get off and running, and then we were able to draw from that because each year was different. The second year was different. We didn't have a lot of sponsorship, so we ended up doing a half-hour show, not a 90-minute show. And then the format of that is different. Like, for instance, I'd ask you to come on the show, so you'd be the special guest.
Yep.
And then we would do results, tables, fixtures. But we'd talk about you mainly because it's only half an hour.
Yep.
And then, of course, the third and fourth season was we went back to 60 minutes and we were able to do more with the show. So, yeah, Michael, he's still a friend today. He's a polarizing person because people either love him or hate him. That, I mean, you get that with some people, but I found him to be a really good friend, and I can't thank him enough for being part of Full On Football. So I just wanted to say thanks to Michael for helping me.
Well, sounds like he did an integral part to your show back in the day, and well, now he's coaching at West Adelaide, which is back in. In the coaching ranking.
It was funny because I used to introduce the show, and yep. I used to say, and my co-host, 4-time Golden Boot winner, 4-time championship titles, and he was also the Serge Melter Medal winner for 1996. So he was quite an awarded player. Yeah. And he used to say, and then the camera would go on him and he'd say, I don't like it when you do that, Nat, right? You know, so he hated me saying it, but I had to because, you know, he was such a great player.
Yep.
So and then in 2010 he was nominated and he's into the Hall of Fame for Award of Excellence.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it almost sounds like when I introduce Mark Talbot and say he plays at every single club in South Australia in every position and now in every position in media.
Well, I think Michael had about 7 clubs that he played at too. So
yeah, he's on par with Mark.
Including the Adelaide United, that exciting time when we started, and it really was the people's team and just so much passion. And he was like the modern day Tim Cahill. He came on as an impact player and he would score goals. And so it was like, wow, everyone loved him because he was just such an impact when he came on. So, yeah, thank you very much, Michael. I can't thank him enough.
This is the part of my show I do every episode at the end. We could do the kicking at questions to wrap it all up.
Okay.
So every guest gets asked these questions.
Okay.
So which footballer would you love to have a kick with on the park if you got a chance to, past or present?
I had some favourite players. Peter Schmeichel was one of my favourite players. So was Ruud Gullit when he played for AC Milan. AC Milan was one of my favourite teams. But I guess David Beckham, I loved the way he played and what he was able to do with that ball, how he was able to bend it. And, you know, he was a bit like a Shane Warne of football. So I'd love to have a kick with Beckham.
That'd
definitely
be good. Yeah, I love that too. I think a lot of people would.
Yeah.
He'd be excellent too. What about 2 people you'd love to kick it with on a Saturday night? Watch some football and maybe have a drink or two or or maybe even go full on four-wheel driving with them.
Well, I'll tell you someone who's really good value is Craig Goodwin's dad, Tony.
Oh, he's an excellent bloke, isn't he?
He is amazing. So definitely him, and I'd probably go Simon Hill as well.
Yes, yeah. So 2 very good picks.
Yeah, I think we would have a very, very good night.
Yeah. You know what? I might have to join you on that one.
Yeah.
We could actually, definitely. I reckon we could tee that up maybe. Actually.
It would be awesome.
I'm sure Tony would be keen to tee that up.
He definitely would.
No, that would be awesome. Tony's a lovely bloke, isn't he? He's still, his son's left LA at the moment, but he's still going out to games and supporting local football as much as LA United as well. And I think I always see Craig Goodwin as a very respectful guy, but after meeting his dad, I understand why.
Absolutely. Yeah. It definitely a chip off the old block. And his dad is the most beautiful person, one of the most beautiful people that you can meet. So genuine.
Yeah.
And just a lovely, lovely person to say that you know him as a friend.
Yeah. just go and chat to him. He'll love it. Yeah. He loves having a chat, and he's got a lot of time for everyone. Yep. That's what I love about him.
Yeah.
And Simon Hill will be a great chat as well.
Well, it just within that story, in that question, when Craig had his debut and Simon was calling the game and Simon was saying, I've never seen a debut like this. And I was texting him. He was playing here. He was playing over here. He started at this club here, and I was texting everything. And then Simon was saying it, and then Tony was saying, how does Simon know all this stuff? He wouldn't know all this stuff. And then when I told him I was texting all this stuff.
During
and
he the game?
Said, yeah, during the game. And then he was report because I had his number, and I was saying, oh, so Simon did this and Simon played here and Simon was Craig did this. And,
yeah.
And then Simon was reporting that back. Oh, did you know that Craig started here? And then Tony said, how does he know that? And I said to him, I was texting him all this stuff about his performances here in South Australia. And he goes, I was thinking, how does he know that? He would not know that.
Nah, could have stitched him up.
That was funny, but it was really good. It was really good.
That's unreal. I got to go. Really I got to look back on that footage and have a listen to that. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So it was his debut match because he said, so Simon said that was the best debut even to this date that he's ever seen of a player.
Mm.
So that shows you how good Craig is.
He worked hard for it and
yep.
It's a good testament to him to what he's achieves.
Absolutely. Up until now.
Well, and it's been a pleasure chatting to you, Nat. I've really, really enjoyed it. It's a lot of stories, this will definitely be over three parts, and I'm sure everyone will enjoy it just as much as I've enjoyed talking to you about it. And I hope you enjoyed it as well.
I definitely have. It's nice to share your experiences that you've done, and like you say, that was my time. Was almost, nearly a generation ago, not quite, and what you're doing now is done differently again. So it's – but the passion, you've got the passion. So that's the good thing is I can see that and I go, yeah, I know, I had that too. That's sad, exactly how I felt, the smile on your face when you start talking about something and how you get excited and your voice goes up and you love doing it. That's the beauty of it. So, keep on keeping on and keep on kicking it local.
I will.
And it's been an absolute pleasure to be able to share some of the stuff that I was able to do with Full On Football.
Yeah, thank you. It's been awesome. And I look forward to sharing it with everyone. And I look forward to hopefully speaking to you again soon. Hopefully it's not too much longer until I get to have another chat with you. And, you brought in some of the souvenirs you had, which was the Socceroos 1974 jersey and your book of all the guests you've had on your show.
Yeah.
Love to see more of it at some stage as well because I'm sure you got so much more.
Yeah, I've got a few unusual things at home. That's for sure.
Well, thank you for joining me. All the best for the future, and hopefully we'll see you around at some games in the near future. Hopefully,
definitely. It's been really lovely to be with you, Johnny. Thank you.
That was Nat Harrison joining me on Kicking It Local. Sadly, that's the end of the latest episode of Kicking It Local. But still want your weekly football fix? Well, tune in to The Local Game, a new show on Kekko Media YouTube, premiering Thursdays at 6 p.m. with replays on Channel 44 each Friday night. For more local stories, don't miss an episode of Kicking It Local. Subscribe on Spotify now.